You're tuned to KDWA AM 1460, FM 97.7, and this is Community In-Depth. I'm your host for this segment, Mike Rood, and I have in studio with me District 54B representative for the Minnesota Legislature, Tony Juergens. Representative Juergens, it's great to have you back again.
Hi, Mike. Another week behind us already.
Another week behind. We were talking before we came on the air here that we're going to start seeing the focus in the legislature shift from committee meetings and things like this to bringing bills out to the floor. But let's start with where we are now. You have a third deadline coming up for bills, and explain that to me a little bit.
Yeah, so I think that I've mentioned this early on in session, how the way the session progresses, it evolves. And early on in our committee hearings, the first few weeks, we hear a lot of backgrounds with the different departments and agencies are reporting in on their budgets and the programs that they've had in place. And then we start hearing bills, and those bills are either held over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill, or they're moved on to another committee, or in some cases moved on out to the House floor for a vote. And as we hit the deadline period, the bill hearings get more and more, and we have to sometimes meet at night and to get everything heard. And it gets pretty frantic, and we put a lot more time in. And we're at the point now where we're going to begin to transition away from that. The bills will be, for the most part, heard. The committee work will be, for the most part, complete. Over the next 2 weeks, we'll be working on putting together those omnibus bills. So in my early childhood learning committee, for example, there will be an early childhood omnibus bill that will have several bills within it that are all on topic. And once we get those wrapped up, then the committee work will be done, unless something changes where they need to call us back in. But what happens now is we will start transitioning more and more to work on the House floor. We'll be hearing more bills that we're going to be debating, and instead of having a House floor session twice a week where not a lot happens, we'll probably be meeting on the House floor probably every day.
Okay.
So the transition really evolves, and it's different this year too because it's remote. So
sure.
Many of us will be sitting in the same chair in our office instead of being in a committee hearing over Zoom. We'll be participating in a floor session over Zoom. Generally, when we're more live and in person, that's just when you see the activity in the state office building wanes a little bit, and the activity over in the Capitol building you see
kinda
increases, and that's where the fast pace and the energy and the visitors and the members of the public are there, and others and the protesters, whether it's for or against something. That's actually something that I miss, because a lot of times, depending on what the bill is, there might be hundreds of people in the Capitol with signs and chants, and they're either for something or mm-hmm. against something, and mm-hmm. that's their opportunity to come and be heard, and for us to hear what they have to say. And we're missing out on that, which is unfortunate.
I remember it being said at one point that for every person that contacts a representative or a senator, that person represents 10 people that don't. Does that still kind of hold true as far as you're aware?
Yeah,
because is there any real statistics on that?
I don't know the statistics on it, but just from a personal perspective, there are some people that I hear from very frequently,
mm-hmm.
And others, obviously, the vast majority of the 39,500 people I represent, I never hear from. When you hear from 10 people, you recognize that they're not the only 10 people in the district that feel that way. They might be representing 100 or 1,000 people that feel that way. So I still encourage people to reach out and send an email on topics that are important to them. And a lot of them are the emails that we get are form letters, I'd say, where they maybe go to a website for a certain topic and they say, click here to contact your representative.
Yep.
And then the letter email we get is basically the same from everybody. So they get the same response too. We'll put one together and then we'll send the same to the to everybody that emailed on that topic. But a lot of, most of them though, are very personalized, and those are the ones that I appreciate. Okay. So I don't know what the statistics are on how many of them reach out to us and how many don't, but there are, you know, and I've always said too, so my district, we talked about before, I represent all of Hastings and Ninninger Township and Denmark Township, which of course all have Hastings addresses, mm-hmm. and then about a third of Cottage Grove and Afton. And per capita, I think that the Afton people are the most active. They have the smallest population of the zip codes, if you want to look at it that way,
right.
that I represent. But I get a lot of emails from Afton on different topics. So from a per capita standpoint, I think they're probably the most active.
Well, and in my position here at KDWA, going through news stories and preparing things, I tend to notice that the people of Afton tend to be very passionate yes. about Afton.
Right.
They absolutely love where they live, and they want to preserve it.
They want to keep it that way.
They
right.
want to keep it that way. And they seem to be very proactive about that, too.
Yeah, they
and
are.
I appreciate that. I really do.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier about the education subcommittee or the education committee and the things going through there, and it kind of sparked in my mind if there was any update on your lunch shaming legislation that you had been working on, you know, even going back to last year and the year before.
Yeah, actually, I've got that bill this year. I haven't talked about it a lot because, I frankly prefer to just not talk about it and hopefully get it done.
Sure.
But, yeah, it is. I'm still hopeful that it'll get included in some format in the omnibus bill.
Okay.
In the education, finance, and policy bill. If it's not in there initially, then I'll offer it as an amendment on the House floor to get the language put into the bill.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I did last year at the very end of session, and we actually ran the clock out on the regular session when we were trying to include that lunch shaming language into the bill, and there was debate back and forth, and we ended up actually taking it up until midnight when the session is constitutionally
ended.
So yeah, yeah. We ran out of time. That, yeah. We ran out of time there. So hopefully it doesn't come to that again this year. But I've got a different Senate author. Senator Housley's carrying the bill there. Last year I had Senator Kent, and I really appreciate her advocating for that. I don't know this to be true, but what I was concerned about is that as the minority leader, that maybe having her name on it, maybe politics came into play a little more than it should have for a bill that should not be political at all, should not be partisan at all. I don't know that that's the case, but we had Senator Housley carry it this year, so hopefully we can get that across the finish line this year. And just for the listeners, just to recall, because it's been about a year since I probably talked about it, but you know, you hear periodically in the news, unfortunately, I don't think kids haven't been in school. I guess that's probably a big reason, but you know, periodically you hear of a student somewhere in Minnesota who had their lunch dumped into the garbage because they didn't have money in their lunch account. And the bill that I have would do several things. It would require the schools to have a policy in place to state how they're going to treat any of those situations when that happens and a child doesn't have money in their lunch account. It would also say that if a student is on the free and reduced lunch program, that they would be served lunch, period.
Sure.
What had happened from time to time is if a student buys something a la carte, maybe they're on the free and reduced, but they buy, you know, a different meal someday or mm-hmm. a bag of chips or some carrots or whatever it is that then puts their account into the negative, that those were treated because of the negative balance, that they wouldn't have been served a hot meal. They would be served a sandwich instead or something like that. But if they're on the free and reduced lunch program, that would not matter if they have a negative balance. They would be served that hot meal. So that's in the bill. And really what we just want to try to prevent is the stigma that you know, kids have by having that happen to them in front of their friends and having the lunch taken away. And so we think that school districts absolutely deserve to be paid for the meals that they're providing, but that's a transaction that should be done between the parent and the school, not the child.
Exactly. I agree with that completely. The other thing that we are looking at right now, and we mentioned it briefly in the beginning, is that the House of Representatives will be going on a break for Passover and Easter observation. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that coming back from that next week, that the focus will shift from committee work to floor work. And you also had mentioned that there are some mandates for business that are working through committees. Can you discuss those?
Actually, I was on the House floor this past week. We voted on a few bills that would put more mandates on businesses, and a lot of us just don't think this is the right time to be doing that because of the struggles that a lot of businesses have had over the past year.
Mm-hmm.
One of the bills, and I get it, I understand the reasoning behind it, but one of the bills that passed would require employers, bars and restaurants, to call back laid off workers. So, in other words, if a bar or restaurant that had been shut down and they're reopening, they have to rehire or offer a position to the people that had worked for them in the past.
Kind of a right of first refusal.
Which I get it, but the way the bill was written, it would give the employee 5 days to respond. Well, the employer, sometimes they don't have 5 days. If we're coming out of an emergency order and the governor says, okay, you can open up in 3 days, they can't wait 5 days to get that answer for that employee. They mm-hmm. need to be able to get up and running sooner. And so there's, I get the intent for it, but I don't think that that's something that we want to put on employers at this time. It did pass through the House, though. I don't think it's going anywhere in the Senate, so it's unlikely to become law. There were another one that had to do with employers not being allowed to ask salary history during an interview. And the reasoning behind this is to pay equity for men and women, mm-hmm. which, as we all know, that there is an inequity when it comes to a woman's pay versus a man's pay, just on average. And in order to try to resolve that or do away with that, this bill would say is that the employer could not ask that question of the woman coming in for an interview of what did you make in your last job. They should be paid what the job pays, what it's worth, not necessarily what they were paid in the past. And so I voted for that one. That one passed. And again, I don't know if it's moving in the Senate, but there are some. The thing is, there are a lot of bills that we talk about every week that we should be working on that we still haven't brought back up. And instead, some of these bills that we are talking about are putting more mandates, I guess, on businesses.
It's kind of weighing down the businesses. They have more things that they have to pay attention to and conform to in order to
stay. They're just trying to relearn, how are they going to operate in this new world.
So what would be a good, then, going back to, say, the right of first refusal that we talked about earlier, and that's what we're just calling it, what would be a good a compromise from your point of view on that?
I don't know that we even need to address it legislatively. Employers are already trying to bring back their people. And in fact, what I've heard from business owners is just the opposite of what this bill was insinuating. What I've heard is that the owners, the business owners, when they are reopening, that they want their people back. They mm-hmm. don't want to have to train somebody new. So it's in their best interest, in most cases, to bring back the employees that have already been trained and are already familiar with their processes and their system. So to me, that's a good example of a solution in search of a problem. I just don't think that it's something that needs to be dealt with legislatively.
It's kind of, you have the abilities, and most companies will want those experienced people back. So why mess with it from the legislative standpoint?
Right. That's my opinion on it.
Sure. And that makes a lot of sense. We have, like I said, break coming up, the deadlines. What are some of the other things that you would like to see accomplished as we move to a floor session? What kind of things are offstage, let's just say offstage, that you want to bring out to the spotlight?
Yeah, really, Mike, it's the same things that we've been talking about. We need to address a couple of the tax issues. We need to address the fact that, as it is right now today, Minnesota is still taxing the proceeds from PPP loans. These businesses that received the loans in order to be compliant, they had to spend that. They had to, you know, spend that money that came from the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
And the federal government is not taxing them, and none of the states in the upper Midwest are taxing them on that income, but Minnesota still is. I get dozens of calls and emails from tax preparers and businesses, business owners from around the district, asking when that's going to change. They want to know if they should go ahead and file their taxes now or wait. Is the law going to change this week? And I have to tell them, not this week. Unfortunately, it just keeps getting pushed out there. So that's something that we need to address. I mean, some of these businesses, we're talking tens of thousands of dollars in tax bills on money that they were required to spend. They couldn't tuck some of it away to pay for their taxes. They were required to spend it.
Use it for what it was
designated. Use it for what it was designated for. And so they did that, and now they're looking at a tax bill. The unemployment tax. Those that receive the unemployment benefits that normally, you know, they were out of work due to shutdowns, due to the government shutdown because of the pandemic. And now they're looking at, in these cases, a lot of the tax bills are much lower. We're talking hundreds rather than thousands for these individuals. But the point is, we're taxing the businesses and the people that were out of work, that needed the most help in this past year. And so those are two things that I think I've talked about every week for the last three or four weeks. But it's something that should be dealt with, and it just hasn't been. I believe I said it last week, and I still unfortunately believe it to be true, that what I think is going to happen, at least in the House, is that by the time those bills come up, they're going to be tucked into a bigger tax bill, a tax omnibus bill, that's going to include some things that a lot of us don't want to see, that we don't want to see a tax increase this year when we're looking at a budget surplus. And what I'm afraid is going to happen is, when that tax bill comes, it's going to have these provisions in there that we've been asking for, that we want to pass, that Minnesotans we feel need, and right along with it, there's going to be a tax in there, increase in there.
Yeah,
so it'll be all take it or leave it, versus let's bring these bills up and let's vote on their own merit.
Okay. We are just about out of time, and as always, I would like to give you the opportunity to provide your contact information should your constituents have questions or concerns.
Well, first of all, I just want to wish everybody a happy Easter that celebrates Easter, and to you, Mike, and your family. And
thank you.
People can contact me at 651-296-3135 or email rep.tony.jurgens@house.mn.
There you go. I would also like to extend my greetings to your family
for this
holiday. Representative Jurgens, once again, it's good to have you in the studio. You're listening to Community In-Depth on KDWA, AM 1460, FM 97.7.